There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Do you understand what I'm talking about? What is our common bond truly? Freedom. Freedom. Without freedom, you can't be a Christian no matter what denomination you belong to. You can't be a Buddhist. You can't own a donut shop. You can't drive from here to Oregon. You can't be an American, because that's what it's all about, and it's the only thing that it's all about. Nothing else. Nothing else.
The utmost manifestation of love and devotion to America is today, as it always has been, resistance of tyranny. Yeah. Resist we must, and resist we will. We will not be silent. We will not obey. We will not wait another moment in fear to stand up for what we know to be right. It is time we start meeting oppression with resistance.
It's about freedom. Only freedom. It means you have to let other people be free.
What's up, everybody? Back for another week. This is Truth, Love, Freedom radio show. Today is January 29, 2008. And I got a few subjects we can cover tonight. Getting into the occult sciences, the mystery religion. And a listener hit me up to talk a little bit about the Georgia Guidestones. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Definitely an interesting topic, the Georgia Guidestones. Okay. Hope you all had a good couple days since the last time I talked to you. And it's been very interesting in my side of things, preparing for this eventual move to hit the road in an RV. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's looking like it's going to happen. It's going to happen no matter what, because I'm going to make it happen. But it's going to happen sooner than I think I'm anticipating. I was actually shooting for June 1st. I think it might actually happen before then. But it'll definitely happen by the end of summer, no matter what. So, I'm looking forward to that. I've been getting myself prepared. We're getting ready to sell all our crap, which is going to be a lot of fun. And it's interesting. I don't know if you've ever done it before, but if you've ever gone out to, like, say, a flea market and tried to sell stuff, I mean, Fools are vicious, man. I mean, vicious, trying to save money and get something for nothing. It's unbelievable. But, you know, it's the nature of everything. You know, it's that's a competitive economy for you. And, you know, no doubt I'm going to have some people take me for a ride, and I'm going to have to see how well I can hold up. I'm not a very good negotiator. I've been a salesperson pretty much my whole life, but I've never been incredibly good at it. Like Rob, I've heard him talk and say that he's a closer. I'm not a closer. Usually when I make a sale, it's by accident or by somebody who just came in knowing what they want. I'm not really good at convincing people of believing things. I present information. Like I could always break down the product and the finest minute detail, but I never like would pressure them or try to close the sale. It was, you know what I'm saying? So I mean, it's true though. It's true. You gotta have the skills. You gotta know how to close a sale, or literally people will come in, get all the information from you, and go buy it from somebody else. And, there's a degree of, responsibility there, I guess, to push them over the edge and get them to commit. Never been good at that. It's just not my thing. So, interesting. Let's start out. First of all, I want to thank Adam for sending me an email asking me to talk about the Georgia Guidestones. It's not a subject I've been incredibly interested in, just because it's obvious that there's a connection there in regards to the mystery religions and their ideas of the future society and the New World Order. I mean, it's just blatantly there and obvious. I didn't feel any need to look into it further. But since he asked, I just took a little time. I'm going to have to reapproach this again in more detail in the future. But I'm going to kind of go through a few things that I think are really interesting and sometimes overlooked about in regards to the Guidestones. Things that I've noticed before, but I didn't really say anything about it because they're not really incredibly important. It's not like I'm about to blow the cover off the Georgia Guidestones issue, but it's definitely notable. It's something that I took notice of, and I just figured maybe you'd be interested in knowing yourself. So, let me start by telling you, if for anybody out there who doesn't know what the Georgia Guidestones are, they're a granite stones that are erected in Elbert County, Georgia, in the middle of nowhere, from my understanding. They're referred to as America's Stonehenge. They have a message on there. I guess they're referred to as the Ten Commandments or the Ten Guides. The people in the mystery schools would hate to refer to them as commandments, would prefer to refer to them as guides because they think that a commandment is a little bit aggressive, I guess you could say, from a god that they don't believe exists. But Ten Guides inscribed into it in eight modern languages, and the shorter messages is inscribed at the top of the structure in four ancient scripts, which are Babylonian, Classic Greek, Sanskrit, and Egyptian hieroglyphs. It's a very large, I'm not going to go into the dimensions, although there is some interesting things there in the dimensions and the numbers in relation to those. I'm not like one who likes to get into breaking down numbers of the occult stuff because a lot of it is just speculation. Using mathematics, you can come to any conclusion you want, I feel like. But I do think that there is some interesting numbers there, let that be said. The other modern languages are English, Spanish, Swahili, Hindi, Hebrew, Arabic, ancient Chinese, and Russian. The message basically reads this: maintain humanity under 500 million, that's population, by the way, in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unite, and this is, okay, that's number two. This is number three. I'll go ahead and number them, even though they're not numbered. I'll do it that way so you know that I'm going on to the next one. Unite humanity with a living new language. Number four, rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Number five, protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Number six, let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Seven, avoid petty laws and useless officials. I don't object to that one, but anyways. Depends on what you consider to be petty laws and whatnot. I guess that's all debatable. Balance personal rights with social duties. By the way, this is number 8. Balance personal rights with social duties. Number 9. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony. I like it's like truth, love, and freedom, but truth, beauty, and love. I don't think I care too much about beauty, but how does that fit in there? Truth, love, beauty. I don't know why that's even in there, but anyways. Prize, truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. And lastly, be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. Interesting, isn't it? All the things that are said there. I'm going to go back over that, and we're going to talk about each one individually. It's probably going to take about half the show to go through the Georgia Guidestones, and then at the second half, we're going to talk a little bit about the representations of Lucifer in the mystery school tradition, because I came across a clip that I think absolutely and totally verifies from Freemasons in their interpretation of the Pike quote that I did a show about Lucifer, and it totally verifies that what I'm saying is correct. And I'm going to play both clips, mine and theirs, so that you can see that I was absolutely correct in that. The only reason I'm doing that is because I don't want people to think that I was speculating. I'm not speculating. The people who are teaching you that Freemasons worship Lucifer and what Lucifer represents are full of crap, okay? They don't understand. And the fact that they interpret it that way is just verification that they don't understand to Freemasons. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit. So, there's commentary that goes along with this. Let me see here. On this tablet, it says, let these be guidestones to an age of reason. An age of reason. If you've listened to my show before, you know the emphasis of the age of reason. And what does that mean? What is the age of reason? Well, if you do any research, you'll know that it is the new age. The age of Aquarius, also known as the New World Order. It's the same thing. The age of reason is the New World Order. It is a world order that is brought into order, order out of chaos. The present being the age of chaos, the age when man ruled himself. Into the age of order, when people who are more enlightened, more reasonable, are guiding mankind in the age of reason, or this new age that's coming, also the new world order, or the world brought into order out of chaos. It's the same thing. Same philosophy, same concepts, same roots. Doesn't matter, you know, if you boil them all down, they come from the same group of people, and they basically mean the same thing. All, you know, in reference to Masonic teaching. The phrase, let these be guidestones to an age of reason, is a reference to the book The Age of Reason by Thomas Paine, and is no doubt a nod to Thomas Carlyle's Resartus. You know what, if you hear any weeping in the background, that's my dog. He's down in his cage. We have to put him in there when, you know, I'm doing my show, and if no one's here, I'm here by myself, by the way. So you're going to hear my dog yelping in the background to replace what would normally be my kids yelping in the background. Sorry about that. It's just the way things go. Because of the fact that we have to put him in the cage so he doesn't chew up our furniture or anything like that. Whenever we're not around, he likes to try to get away with stuff. And he's still relatively new, so we're still teaching him. Okay, and then they have an explanatory tablet. And this explanatory tablet says, when it was erected, says, let this be guidestones to an age of reason, explains all the different languages, and it also has a list of astronomical features. The first astronomical feature, channel through stone, indicates a celestial pole. Okay? Number 2, horizontal slot indicates annual travel of sun. And number 3, sunbeam through capstone marks noontime throughout the year. It says, author is of this guy of the Guidestones and the Ten Commandments, or Ten Guides, is R.C. Christian. And it says right underneath it, a pseudonym. sponsors a small group of Americans who seek the age of reason. And it says there's a time capsule placed 6 feet below this post on, and it says to be opened on, and it doesn't say anything else. It doesn't mark anything about, you know, where it's on and when it's to be opened. So, and I guess pseudonym is misspelled. irony, I guess you could say, for an age of reason. An age of enlightenment where they can't spell synonym. Gotta love it. Physical data, I'm not going to get into all that, but it's a bunch of numbers. But there is one thing about it that I'm going to get into here in a second. It says granite quarried from Pyramid Quarries located 3 miles west of Elberton, Georgia. Why would they want to put where the granite came from? Have you ever thought to ask that question? And if you're wondering, no, there's not a quarry called Pyramid. There is a company called Pyramid Quarries, Incorporated, located 3 miles from Elberton. Now, I'd imagine, I mean, this is just speculation, but I would imagine if you spent all this money erecting this edifice to guide mankind into this age of reason, why would you go ahead and let the company that supplied the granite put their name on it? Maybe they were looking for a promotional thing and they thought, hey, we can get a discount. I don't honestly think that that's the case. I think it's really ironic that that this is on there and no one's pointed this out and thought to themselves, what the hell did they put that on there for? Because if it's such a big deal and they went through all the effort to erect this damn thing, you know, guidestones to an age of reason, that they would, you know, even be cheap enough. I mean, maybe they are cheap. I don't know. I mean, this is speculation because it could be that. They could have, you know, said, hey, if you let us put the name of our quarry on there to promote us as an advertisement, we'll give you a 20% discount on your granite. Who knows? I don't know. I don't imagine that that's the case. Obviously, it's still going to be incredibly expensive, and I just don't think that that's the reason why it's on there. But it is on there. Take note. Okay. Let's go back through the Ten Commandments, or I'm sorry, the Ten Guides for Humanity. Starting with number one, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. 500 million. It's not a lot of people. And a lot of people have speculated that this is obviously a population control thing. That they wanted to eliminate the population by so many million, billions of people. Now, currently, right now, there is 6,700,000,000 people on this planet. As of July 2008. Actually, let me give you the exact number, just so you know. 6,706,993,152. That's how many people as of July 2008. Now, obviously, that's probably inaccurate, but not within a billion. At least. So, you know, there's about 6 to 7 billion, more like 7 billion people on this planet. 500 million is not a lot of people. You're talking about the elimination of nearly 6 billion people. That's a lot of people. Let's think of this in terms of pie. You have a pie, right? And you cut it up into sections to represent, you know, people by the billions. Let's cut it into six pieces, or six and a half pieces, representing the 6.5 billion people on the planet. You're taking out every single one of those except for the half slice. That's how much pie will be left on the planet of worth of people and population. Very small in comparison to what we have now. And to them, I guess that means that we're in perpetual balance with nature. I find that incredibly disturbing simply because the simple fact is that there is no... Okay, first of all, this idea that the population is too much is bullshit. Let me say that straight up. It's bullshit. Anybody with common sense knows that it's bullshit. The reason I can prove, without a doubt, without going into too many statistics and trying to overdo it, is to simply make the fact, the point clear. Since we've learned how to develop agriculture, and we've learned how to use canals to control water supply, and whatnot, we can, in fact, use those mechanisms in order to grow food. And since food comes out of the soil and can grow nearly anywhere, that isn't an incredibly harsh condition, and in some cases you can still use greenhouses and things of that sort to grow food, there is no need to limit people that much. The earth is capable of providing us with more than enough food and more than enough land for people to live. So the idea that we're out of perpetual balance with nature is absurd. But let's talk about what population control issues we do have. Number one, we pollute the air. We pollute the seas. Well, let's just say we pollute. True. It's absolutely true. We don't have enough food right now because there's not enough food grown, because people need to grow food in order to feed people, right? And they need some kind of compensation to grow food. What else could be the issue? Land. There's not enough places for people to live. That's true. We have people crowded, you know, into small areas. Well, wait a second. Let's think about these three situations. Number one, the earth can provide enough food. People just aren't growing it. Why aren't people growing food? Because they don't have land. Well, why don't people have land? Because land costs a lot of money and not a lot of people can afford land. And most of the major land, is owned by huge corporations. Case in point, in every area I live, near Hearst Corporation owns thousands of acres of oceanfront land. So, obviously, and they're not going to sell that. They're hanging on to it, and I don't think they'll ever get rid of it. So, you know, and they grow cattle. They have their cattle roaming on there, and there's Hearst Cattle Company and whatnot. Now, does Hearst Corporation need thousands of acres of oceanfront land in order to maintain their business? And or... is the business worth the land that they're maintaining? I mean, they make money from a number of other things, you know. Is it seem absurd to think about possibly giving that land to the people? Okay, so you know, we're taking into consideration these things. I'm sorry for making this so simplistic it almost seems retarded. I mean, I'm not trying to do that. It's just I don't want to complicate things. Let's make it simple. The problem is economy. We don't have enough food because we don't have enough people on land. We have too many regulations about food. We have more than enough land and enough places where there's a good, decent enough environment to grow food that we should be able to feed the people and have tons of leftover food. We destroy food every single year. People are only growing enough food that's necessary in order to make the money that they need to make, and then they trash the rest. The governments are paying people to keep prices up so it doesn't collapse the economy. So we're literally starving people and cramming them into small places because of greed. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. It's not overpopulation. The problem is economics. The problem is greed. There is more than enough, you know, land for people to live and grow food. The idea that maintaining humanity under 500 million is absurd. What they should have said, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with the economy, which will allow us to maintain ourselves as the wealthy inheritors of the world. That's what they should have put. I mean, that's really what they're saying, in my opinion. Because no scientist, unless you're going to take it and go, okay, well, we can't change the economy. The way the economy works is the way it has to work in order for the world to work. But I don't believe that. I mean, I'm a free market person, but at the same time, I'm not stupid. I think that if the government would just back off, people would take care of people. I really believe that. But the fact is that they keep taking from people, so people don't give anymore. They expect the government to supply it because it's already being taken from them. But little do they know that money's not being given, is not being given to the poor. It's being given to the military-industrial complex and various other corrupt agencies of the government, when it should be going to the poor. At least they use justifications, and they always find ways to get money from people using good justifications, and then they, after a while, when no one's paying attention, they shift that money to something else. And generally, it's war. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Well, that's very nice sounding, but let's be realistic here. What are they actually saying? Guide reproduction wisely. They're saying that we want to make sure that people who are fit, and I mean, how can you guide reproduction wisely? I mean, I just can't. I mean, we have sex, we have babies. And if me and my wife have sex, we're going to have a baby. We've had two, okay? What could I have done to guide reproduction wisely? Well, there's only a few things that I can think of. Either one, they're telling me don't have babies too young. Or two, they're saying don't have too many babies. But that seems so simplistic. Don't have too many babies. Okay, everybody can have one baby. That doesn't seem very wise. I mean, that's going to minimize the population. But, I mean, this is just throwing it out there, and you can take, you know, bite or not. What if, I think that maybe what they're possibly saying is wisely, and meaning have the smart people, the fit people, the pretty people be the ones who reproduce, and the ones who are ugly, stupid, and primitive, not. That's wise. Because then that mankind will grow in evolution as time goes on, because the better genes will be getting together, and the lesser genes will be left behind. I think that's probably and that's just, you know, like I said, this is all kind of speculative because I didn't, you know, write little subtitles under here explaining exactly what they meant. But that's just something I'm throwing out there. Take it or leave it. Unite humanity with a living new language. Don't know what that means. I'm going to go ahead and pass on that. It could mean a lot of things. A living new language. Okay, they want a new language where everyone can speak the same language. Sure. All right, whatever. Next, rule passion, faith, and tradition, and all things. Okay? So all things is what they're saying, but they're giving emphasis on passion, faith, and tradition with tempered reason. Going back to the whole age of reason thing, and if you've listened to my show before, you understand the concept of being reasonable versus being superstitious. And if you haven't heard that, please go back and listen to my other podcast. I don't want to go into it right now, but I did explain the mentality of the occult mystery traditions and the difference between being a primitive, superstitious person and being a reasonable, enlightened person. Okay? There is a difference, and those are kind of the contradictions there. So they're saying rule passion. Okay? Instinct and passion are almost interchangeable. Passions relate to the heart. Things of the heart, like love, was a necessity of man to reproduce. So passions and primitiveness kind of go hand in hand to these people, especially in the teachings of Freemasonry, specifically Pike and Eliphas Levi. Now, faith also goes along with it, because it says, let this be a guide to the age of reason. Well, if you read The Age of Reason by Thomas Paine, which I'm going to go into here in a little bit, faith is not something that he endorsed, okay? Faith to him was absurd. He didn't think that faith was valid in any way, shape, or form, that it needed to be, his perspectives needed to be based upon enlightenment and knowledge, okay? So let's take passion, faith, both aspects of a primitive person, and tradition. Well, we have traditions, okay. There's certain traditions that are acceptable to them and some that are not. So I think that's what they're possibly referring to. That's just me giving my interpretation of what I think that's being said there, with tempered reason, going along with the concept of the age of reason, okay? Protect people in nations with fair laws and just courts. Well, I figured that's a little sugar, you know, thrown in there. Fair laws and just courts. Fair and just is a matter of perspective. See, a person who says, I don't like that guy's house color. It's really hurting my eyes. And the fact that I have to live across the street from it is really bothering me. It's just not fair that I have to be tortured by that person's house color. So I think that we need to enact a law to make it fair so that colors can be softer and you can't use any wild colors. Because my preference is softer colors. I don't like loud colors like that. So my idea of fair... Do you think this is my idea fair? Because I'm the person whose eyes are being affected. Now switch it and put yourself in the other person's shoes. I like my house to be loud. I don't like soft color houses. They're boring. I want something fun and exciting. And I don't want to be forced to live a boring existence because the color of my house is... So what's the fair here? What's the justification of fair? Simply, what are just courts? These are all perspective things. It sounds good. Like, I call it a little sugar. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Okay. They're just basically putting a little sugar in there. It sounds nice. Okay, whatever. But let's be realistic here. It gets a lot more complicated than that. And if you know, based upon the stuff that they've said before this, especially the part about maintaining humanity under 500 million and perpetual balance with nature, improving fitness and diversity, whatever, it doesn't sound like their perspective is going to be the same as mine. So, but it's just a little sugar. It sounds good. You know, no matter whose mouth it comes from, it sounds good. Until you get into the complexities of what fair and just is. So it's an absurd little thing to say, but it sounds good. So it's a little sugar. Okay, next. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Let all nations rule internally, meaning there's all these nations and they all rule their people internally. But all external controversies between the nations get dealt with in a world court. Reference world government. I've been talking about the New World Order and how it is a world government, that all nations will come under a central authority, but the nations will keep their borders. That's the thing that people don't understand. There is going to be nations. Of course, there's going to be larger sections like North America and South America, you know, North American Union, South American Union, African Union, Asian Union, European Union. All these things are coming soon. Okay? But there are still going to be nations. It's not going to be just like a borderless world, even though, I mean, what do you consider a border? Can you not go in and out of borders? Well, people go in and out of borders all the time right now. All you have to do is have a certain amount of money. You can't just come live in America. Well, you can, but you're not supposed to. That's the idea, right? Well, I think people are going to be allowed to move freely, and I think the world court is going to be the thing that kind of helps guide that around. Right now they're moving in that direction. So we know that this is in reference to kind of world government idealisms, many of which were expressed, through Rosicrucianism, New Freemasonry, you know, the occult societies, New Age, things of that sort. And Rosicrucianism, at least modern Rosicrucianism, not referring to the old stuff. I don't even know if there's a link between the two. They claim there is, but I don't believe that there is. I think that they're just re-sprouted up what had once existed. And that's why Freemasonry is really the only one that keeps them maintained, is really considered a valid mystery school. The Rosicrucians are more of a New Age philosophy organization, and the New Age has very much been intergrained with them for quite a while. And we'll get to that in future, you know, shows. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Hey, more sugar. Petty laws and useless officials. Hey, in my opinion, a world court is pretty damn useless. I mean, petty laws, you know, I don't want to pay taxes. That's a petty law to me. But, you know, or, you know, I mean, it's all a matter of interpretation again. It's more of that sugar stuff to make it sound good. The things that you can just tell, there's certain things that really matter here, and there's some things that are just, you know, ear candy. Balance personal rights with social duties. Okay, that's instructing me. To balance my personal rights, with social duties. Well, what are my rights? And what are my duties? And how would I balance them? There's a question to ask yourself. Because is it my personal right to decide what my social duties are? As long as I'm not affecting anybody in a negative way, what justifies a social duty that would require me to compensate my personal rights in order to balance them? I mean, I can't imagine what else they could be. Well, let's think about some of the social duties these people talk about. They talk about, making sure that there's no poor. Okay, so now that's a social duty. I have a societal duty to help provide for people who are incapable of providing for themselves. Socialism. And my personal right means that I have to compensate by giving some of my money, which is my money I shouldn't have to give, for the sake of the social duty. What other social duties could there be? Helping old ladies across the street? It's my personal right to decide whether or not to do that. I don't see how I can balance that. Is there going to be a police officer who goes, you didn't balance your personal right there with your social duty? Your social duty was to help that lady. I'm taking you to jail. Or, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, there's certain things that are going to come into play here. What other kind of social duties would I have? Building people's houses, chipping in, you know, helping people move. The only thing I can think of, no matter what it boils down to, is that the only thing, social duty that I could see myself participating in, aside from just philanthropic work of my own free will, that would require me to sacrifice a personal right is giving money to the poor. I mean, I almost seem like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it almost feels like it, the implication there is socialism. I mean, I, and of course, this is all speculation again because there's no subtitles. Take it for what it's worth. You may disagree with me. That's perfectly fine. If you have any ideas, feel free to share. Actually, I'm going to check the chat room. I haven't even been in there yet. Anyways. Oh, wow. Big posts here. Okay. Well, I don't see anything here. Let's see. Okay. Let's move on here to the next one. If I can find it. There it is. Okay. All right. Prize truth, beauty, and love, seeking harmony with the infinite. Okay, I guess this is kind of a reference to God or spirituality or what would you define as the infinite, okay? And the infinite is kind of an abstract way of saying God. It's kind of the same way the Freemasons call it, use grand architect of the universe, to, you know, in reference to God, because it doesn't matter which God you're referring to. It can mean any of them. So, prize truth. I'm down with that. But that's another relative thing. My truth, your truth, whose truth? Who's going to decide what the truth is? But we'll prize it, okay? I'll hold it into esteem. I do already, so... I mean, I wouldn't name my show Truth, Love, Freedom for nothing. Beauty. Beauty's another... I guess it depends on what you consider beauty, you know? I think, you know, a dusty crate of records is a pretty beautiful thing. I mean, when I see it, I get excited, and I like to go digging through them. That's my opinion, you know, dusty old books, beauty to me. Are they? I mean, I don't know what kind of beauty they're referring to. Another relative thing, but it sounds good. And more sugar, love. Okay, well, I'm down with that. Seeking harmony with the infinite. Okay, well, it depends. As long as you're okay with me seeking my own personal harmony with my own idea of the infinite, then we're fine. If your idea of the infinite is the one that you want me to seek harmony with, well, then we have a problem. But it doesn't really say that, but it sounds good. It sounds more sugar. So as long as, you know, it doesn't infringe on my freedom to decide what the infinite is, if I want to believe that my, you know, microphone here is the infinite, I can. And I can sit here and seek harmony with this microphone if I want. That's freedom. Unless they have a problem with that, so... Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. You know, I don't remember who it was. I think it was a comedian who said this, and I think I can 100% agree, which is no matter how much we do to this planet, it ain't going nowhere. We are going somewhere. We're the ones that are going to die here, okay? If we pollute the earth is still going to be here. It'll clean itself. It'll weed out all the bad stuff, and it'll restart again. If the ideas of evolution are true, of course. You know, so leave room for nature. over 3/4 plus of the planet is freaking empty, okay? There's hardly anybody on this planet. We're all just kind of scattered around. The population's basically condensed into cities, the majority of it. So I don't know what they mean, leave room for nature. You know, I guess if you live in the middle of New York, you can that has an appeal. I live out in the middle of nowhere. I have, you know, I live on a dirt road, and I have, you know, squirrels running through my trees. I have nobody living to the right of me and nobody living to the left of me. I do have a neighbor across the street, but they have no neighbors around them, okay? So, yeah, I don't know. I leave room for nature, okay. I guess that means more population control, and I don't know where nature needs more room, but, you know... obviously, 3/4 of the planet is empty. I don't really think it's an issue. And if they're referring back to the ideas of maintaining humanity under 500 million, I still don't buy into it because I think that's bullshit. The planet is perfectly capable of supplying a larger population with what they need. That we're not overpopulated nearly. I think we can populate the planet 3 times more than what we have now and still be fine. Not to say that it wouldn't have a drastic effect, especially with the way our economics are set up and the way we consume and things of that sort and the way we pollute. We'd have to change our ways. We don't have to lower the population. That's where I'm coming from. So, let's get into this idea about let these be guidestones to an age of reason, okay? Well, obviously, this is their idea of reason, but it's obviously also alluding to the age of reason by Paine. Thomas Paine wrote a book, The Age of Reason. He also wrote another book called, I'm trying to remember what it's called. I should know this, but I don't, so don't laugh at me. Where is it at? The Rights of Man. And where else is it? Common Sense. Common Sense. Think about that. The Rights of Man. He talks about the rights of man, common sense, and the age of reason. So let's get an idea of where he was. If they're alluding to this guy, let's talk about a little bit about his ideas about what is the age of reason exactly. I'm going to give a quote. I'm going to go on a break real quick and try to get my dog to shut up because he's yelping in the background and it's annoying me. but here's an interesting quote. An age of intellectual freedom, when reason would triumph over superstition. When the natural liberties of humanity would supplant priestcraft and kingship, which were both secondary effects of politically managed foolish legends and religious superstitions. Do you think that religion, even though they refer to unity with the infinite, do you think the idea of religion or religious dogmas or superstitions, in their opinion, would play into this age of reason, this new world order that they're talking about? Obviously not. Okay? He's talking about an age of intellectual freedom. He wants reason to triumph over superstition. Does that not sound familiar? If you've listened to my previous shows, you'll remember I read through Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike, and he was talking about the difference between superstition and the ignorant, superstitious man, the primitive state of man, and the enlightened man. And how some are in different stages of evolutionary development, the more advanced ones being people who have used their reason capacities to temper reason or control, I mean, temper emotion or passions and control it and whatnot. And I'm getting all fumbled up here. My dog is really bothering me, and I'm going to get a glass of water. So I'm going to come back in just a second, and we are going to talk some more about the age of reason. Be right back. Okay, I'm back. Now, I went ahead and let my dog out. This is kind of an experiment. Usually he's quiet, but sometimes he can be really annoying and loud. So if he starts barking, I'm just going to cut to a break real quick and get rid of him. But I'm hoping that he just laid down finally. Okay, I'm hoping that he's just going to chill in here with me and calm down because it's getting really annoying to hear him. I mean, honestly, this dog is the biggest wussy in the history of dogs. I mean, he cries all the time. His whole existence is crying. And plus, he has a sad face. He's a basset hound, so he has a really sad face. And it's just a big weenie. I like him. He's a good dog. Good with my kids and stuff. Just kind of hangs out. Doesn't really do too much. Gets into a little bit of trouble, but not too bad. But anyways, if you hear him whining in the background again, I'll go lock him outside or something. Anyways, let's get back to the thing. So let me read that quote again just so we can pick up on the concept here. An age of intellectual freedom, when reason would triumph over superstition, when natural liberties of humanity would supplant priestcraft and kingship, which were both secondary effects of politically managed foolish legends and religious superstitions. And he called this secular millennialism. This is what Freemasonry teaches, just so you guys know. And I'm going to prove it to you when we go through it more and more. I mean, I'm going to keep going back to the subject of Freemasonry, and we're going to talk about it. As a matter of fact, in a little bit, I'm going to talk about the ideas of reason and how Lucifer, does not equate to a religious concept. They do not worship Lucifer. They don't even believe in Lucifer. It's a philosophic concept, and I'm going to play something later that confirms that my interpretation of that was correct, coming from actual Freemason podcast. But it gives you an idea, okay, that the world in which they imagine this age of reason is one in which we'd get rid of superstition, and that reason would come to rule mankind, okay. But obviously it depends on how far that goes, as it can get to be a little sticky on in some cases, depending on what he's referring to. But, you know, just giving you another idea of his kind of disdain. I mean, this is basically what they're alluding to, right? The Age of Reason. So they could have used the New World Order. They could have said the New Age. They could have said a lot of things. But they focused on the Age of Reason. Okay. Another quote from Common Sense. The Christian theory is little else than the idolatry of the ancient mythologists, accommodated to the purposes and power of revenue. Purposes of power and revenue. So obviously, they have little tolerance for religion in the sense of, like, I'm a Christian and I should be able to exist in this Age of Reason. No, I don't think that they're going to be allowed in there. And I made it perfectly clear that I think that the New World Order religion, Freemasonry and such, teaches atheism. I believe that. I believe that they teach a form of metaphysics. They allow a little room for metaphysics, but basically what they're talking about is a utopian society that is referred to as the New World Order. And Payne is basically, that's exactly what his book is about. It's a utopian vision, okay? And it's very, has it leaves very little room for, well, it's not, let me just put it this way. It's vicious. It's a vicious attack on religion and the, and how, religion as a, position of authority in any society is a folly, basically. Not to say that I totally disagree with them, but I disagree with him a little bit. He has some, I agree with him in the sense that I don't believe we should have a theocracy in any way, shape, or form, but definitely that there's definitely an aspect of religion that should be tolerated in a society that's free, regardless of the consequences. That's what I think. But they would think that I'm naive. And that's fair. If they want to say that, they can. I think they're heartless. Anyways. So this is what they're referring to, the Age of Reason. This is the guide to the Age of Reason, right? And going back to the guide stones, let's talk about the way that they are laid out. Let me get the picture up here. Okay. Now, on the tablet, it lays out and explains the layout. Guidestone languages, and then it shows right in the box where it says, let these be guidestones to an Age of Reason. The top one, the top piece, has Babylonian, Egyptian, Babylonian cuneiform, Egyptian hieroglyphics, Sanskrit, and classical Greek. Why would they choose those three, the three languages to be in the center? Okay? And then let's think about the ones that are popping out from there. Now, in I talked about this before, in Freemasonry and the mystery religions, often what they do is they teach religion based upon kind of a comparison religion idea. They go through and they trace the history and how one evolved into another and how one affected another. That's what they believe. They believe that all religions originated with a form of astrotheology is what it's referred to as today, even though there's never a reference to that. Basically, paganism, they believe all ideas resulted from observing the environment and trying to understand it, and that some people would get it and some people didn't, and the ones who didn't get it formed myths based upon astrological occurrences and so on. I hope that's not my dog tearing up my kitchen. Anyways, I may have to pause here in a second. And just so you know, caller, I did see that you called in. I will invite you to call in towards the end here in about half an hour if you just hang tight. Okay, so they believe that this is basically what's going on. Now, when you go through Freemasonry, what Freemasonry tries to do, and it does it subtly and by throwing hints and kind of giving you references to so many obscure religious concepts, they try to encourage you to investigate those religious concepts and the religion they come from and the history. It focuses in on the religious concepts and the myths, but basically what it does is it does so by referencing them to the history. And they're laying out a history without talking about the history. They're not saying this comes from that, which comes from this. They're just showing you the comparison between the different religious ideas of the various religions during certain time periods. That way, you are going through and looking at the comparison and going, wow, that's pretty interesting. And then you're supposed to go, okay, well, let's look into the history. And then all of a sudden you see that there's a connection there between the alleged evolution of the history of that religion into another religion and so on, splintering off into categories and everything. It is comparative religion. That's what they teach. The degrees are laid out as such. They start out really mild and they get thicker and thicker and thicker as you go down the different degrees. okay? And all of it's part of an educational path to try to bring you to a conclusion of some sort. This thing that they're supposed to be bringing you is enlightenment. Now, what is enlightenment? What do you have to believe to be enlightened according to Freemasons or the mystery cults in general? That is a subject for debate. I personally believe that you come to a point where you drop all beliefs in conscious deities at all. You believe in the idea, the deification of the spirit or the philosophic concept of man in oneness. But you don't actually believe that there's any kind of real paranormal activity going on. But you will believe in metaphysics, which is kind of a science. It's more of a science of things, of spirituality, than it is a superstitious aspect of spirituality. They're willing to embrace that, but basically what they teach is science. And science, of course, started out supernatural. It started out with people who had superstitious ideas and would attribute things. And as they learned, they evolved, right? Well, now the age of reason is one in which they're hoping that man will come to the conclusion that there's no need for God anymore, that man is in charge of his own destiny, and therefore, if we want to have a perfect society, it's on the shoulders of man to accomplish this. Okay? This is what's taught. They call it the age of reason, the new world order, the new order of the ages. It is it's referenced to the Philosopher's Stone, or I'm trying to remember the chiseling down of a stone out of the quarry, which they call the rough ashlar, to the perfect ashlar. They call it the order out of chaos. They call it the great work. It's all the same thing. It's man becoming perfect and affecting his society to become a more intellectually based society, minus the superstition and ignorance and foolishness that of the past. That is the bringing order out of chaos. And it's them who they believe should rule, because they're the ones that are enlightened and smart enough to know what to do with mankind, that if primitive man ruled, they would destroy the earth, basically. Okay. So understanding that concept and thinking about what we just read, you can easily see that there's a comparison in ideas. Now, the square with the four languages on it are in reference to the very first civilizations, which they believe they're responsible for building. They refer to themselves abstractly as the builders. The builders of societies. The builders of edifices and buildings. In other words, man was living in caves. The builders built a home. The builders built a temple. The builders built civilization. Okay? They are the ones, through their science, their geometry, their mathematics, all that stuff, okay, the sciences, were able to bring about civilization. And civilization is in a progressive trend towards perfection, or the new world order, or the age of reason, right? But what were the very first civilizations? The ones that were the foundation of all civilizations started with these four languages. Babylonian, which came out of the Sumer region, right? Sumer was the very first civilization, which eventually became Babylonia. Sanskrit came from India, from the Indus River Valley, another cradle of civilization. The Greek came from the Mycenaean civilization, another cradle of civilization, which gave birth to various very advanced ideas. And then, of course, the Egyptian, one of the very first empires and civilizations to ever exist. Okay? These are the cradles of civilization as we know it. All things, including the establishment of government and religion and society, came from these regions. Before that, people were like nomadic tribes roaming about. Okay? And it was obviously through, Egyptian river. They had the two rivers that came together, I forget what they're called, the Nile. The Babylonian came out of Sumer. Sumer was the river, and it was between a couple, I'm trying to remember the names of the rivers. Flaking right now. But anyways, all these civilizations came from fertile regions where they learned agriculture. Okay? Basically, so those are the cradles of civilization, and they have those in the center. Towards the outside, in a very interesting layout, I think, you have the Russian and Chinese coming out from the corner between the two languages of Egyptian and Babylonian. Well, think about the regional aspect here. Of the evolution, if you will, of the cultures and the religions and the languages. Okay? If these are the first languages, like Egyptian and Babylonian, were in the Middle Eastern region, You have the Babylonian, classical Greek, kind of in the Mediterranean region. You have the Sanskrit and classical Greek, and referring to the southern region between, you know, the Mediterranean and the East. You have Hebrew and Arabic in Middle East, you know, East Mediterranean, which, and it's right at the corner of the Egyptian and Sanskrit. I think that basically what they were doing is, based upon the evolution, and I think one of these are a little bit questionable, the Chinese-Russian one sticking out from the corner of the Egyptian-Babylonian. I never traced the lineage between those, because I don't know much about Chinese or Russian culture, honestly. I'm not sure really if that's an accurate portrayal of it, but I think that it's very interesting that they came off at certain angles like that would give reference to the origins of the languages and such. We got a caller calling in. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, so you're doing a show about the Georgia Godsends, but did you even tell who, like, put them up?
Nobody knows who did it.
Oh, come on, dude.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a second. I mean, it's R.C. Rosenkreutz is the name, or I'm sorry, R.C. Christian, which is reference to the Rosicrucian guy, so... But
what if it was just like a bunch of like eco hippie guppy guys that like had a little bit of bread and like built that shit?
It's possible. Nobody knows who did it. I could call them hippie. I would think that would be a fair assessment.
Yeah, I could. Well, yeah, but did you see the people that defamed it? Like the stuff they did?
Yeah, I saw that. That was, I mean, they made themselves. Let me just say this. If you're going to deface something, don't make yourself look like a stupid ass. Because this is talking about...
I know,
about
they couldn't even spell, man.
I know, Jesus. I mean, it's like every time somebody tries to do stuff like this, they make themselves look stupid, and it only further improves the point of the people who do these things. Because they believe that they're smarter and more enlightened than everybody else. So a stupid ass decides to deface it and say, you know, death to the New World Order and shit, and then they misspell everything, and they just basically prove the point. You know what I'm saying? I mean, God, it's so frustrating because people don't realize how they play into the hands of these people, like, all the time. It's absurd.
It's hilarious, man.
Yeah, it's definitely hilarious. Is this Nubis?
Another one like that is Luke Radowski confronting the Big New.
Oh, God, yeah. That was... Dude, I mean,
9/11 wasn't caused by you and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds.
Yeah. Let me say, I like Luke. I think he's a good guy. But when you confront these guys in front of a whole bunch of intellectuals, and all you can do is sit there and make accusations, and, you know, you can't even talk straight, or have a reasonable argument, or even have a question. You know, they start out with a simple question, and then they go off, you know what I'm saying, into all this bullshit, and you make themselves look like stupid asses. You know what I'm saying to these people?
Yeah.
I mean, they're really just playing to the hands of these guys all the time. You know?
Yeah, totally. One thing I wanted to bring up was, last night I was posting on the Jack Blood forum, Deadline Live.
Uh-huh.
And I put up a thread, which I know Robert Veer likes it, and I know, you know, a lot of people that like it, that I thought it was a cool idea. It was 9/11 True for Beauty Pageant. And it was between Alex Jones, Jack Blood, and Robert Veer. And it was a poll. It was a poll, right?
Yeah.
And immediately after I posted that up, I got banned. Like, I can't even access the website.
Nice. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. where's the freedom of expression and, like, creativity and free speech and shit?
Yeah,
like,
that just seems... I mean, that's... I mean, yeah, I understand. I understand what your position is. I mean, there's times where it's fair to just basically ban somebody because they're being a dick. But that you're just having fun and you're taking it a little too seriously. I haven't read it all, but I'll just base it off what you're saying. It sounds like they just overreacted to it. I don't know who they are, but yeah, whatever. Anyways, thanks for the call, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Have
good show.
All right, thanks. Peace.
Call in, people. Call in, motherfuckers.
All right. Just so you know, if you do want to call in, I'll go ahead and answer the phone. The number is 1-877-REVERE-0, 1-877-738-3730. So getting back to the whole Guidestones thing, it's interesting to me that they lay it out in that respect. Basically, as you're walking between, say, the Arabic and the Chinese pillars, the language is on your left and the language is on your right, you're walking up to the Egyptian. And as you're walking between the Russian and the English, you're walking up to the Babylonian. And you know what I'm saying? Spanish and Swahili. And I find it really interesting that there's, if you look into the alleged history or evolution of religion, as it were, according to the mystery schools, which, like I said, is a comparative religion idea. You can even learn it in college. It's not like some big secret or anything. These religions, the way they're laid out, is laid out in a way that kind of connects to the origin of that particular culture. The origins being with Greek, Egyptian, Babylonian, and Indian. The Age of Reason. Now, let's get into some of the speculation about the... the person, the name of the person, the synonym by which they're referencing the creator or the author of the Georgia Guidestones. R.C. Christian. Well, the head, the alleged founder, the mythical, I would even go so far as saying, mythical founder of the Rosicrucian Secret Society, which is in like another branch of Freemasonry in a sense. Freemasonry even has degrees called the Rose and Cross, another way of saying Rosicrucian. Comes from Christian Rosenkreutz. Okay? Christian Rosenkreutz is the alleged founder of the Rosicrucian Society. The Rosicrucians, or the Rose and Cross. R.C. Christian may be a synonym, and it says it's a synonym. So R.C. Christian is a synonym. There's no doubt about it. It's not a real name. It's referencing something or somebody in a cinematic form. Synonymic form, I should say. Sorry, I said that wrong. I didn't even know pseudonymic is a word. I have to check that. It sounded right. Anyways, you get the idea. So Christian R.C. could be Christian Rosenkreutz, which goes along with this mystery cult idea of religious ideas and the ideas of the new age that's coming, the Age of Reason. Which to me, if it is true, and if you're willing to buy into that, and I think it is true. Absolutely, I think it's true. If it is true that this is a reference to the Rosicrucians, then it goes right along with what I'm talking about. These people are not religious. They are people who are atheists at essence, okay? And this, and these notions of them being Luciferian, you know, God-worshipping and pagan, whatever, you know, they get in. I've heard so many accusations against the mystery school religions are totally unfounded and based upon on someone's just basic ignorance. I mean, that's what it is. And case in point, I'm going to be going into Lucifer here shortly. And that, trust me, it's a big case in point. I think that pretty much does it. I think we kind of broke it down for, I think, everything that it's worth, other than trying to get into some of the secret coding. But when you get into all that kind of weird stuff, you know, it's all speculation, and most of the time it's total bullshit. And you'll hear people do that. And my advice to you is, if you can't prove it with research, you can say that it's speculation, but if it's so speculative that it almost seems, and it has no relevance, I would almost drop it. I would just totally drop it. I mean, what's the point? Astronomically is obvious. You know, high noon is representing the, you know, the middle of the day, or also the mid-age, you know, and then they have it, let me see, where's the astronomical aspects of it here, and we can talk about that real quick before we head out of this topic matter. Horizontal slots, annual travel of the sun. Well, the sun going through the equinoxes, representing the zodiac, which is in reference to the new age being the age of Aquarius. If you don't understand how that works, you know a standard clock, with there's 12 hours in a day, right? The standard clock is also in reference to the 12 houses of the zodiac. Imagine it like the small hand going around the clock, right? And then there's the little hand going around before it, and then when it finally gets over to the 11th hour, the last hour of the 12th cycle, it's the 11th house of the zodiac going into, or the 12th house of the zodiac, sorry, going in, starting over from scratch. The 12th house is the age of Aquarius. As of the year 2000, and I forget the exact date right now, and it's debatable. Some people have argued which one is the legitimate age of Aquarius. Most people just kind of considered year 2000 to be the age of Aquarius, and some people consider us to be going through the transition from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, but that age of Aquarius is the new age. That is the age that is referred to in the new age movement. That is the age referred to in the Rosicrucian Society, the Freemasons. The Freemasons actually had a publication prior to the invention of the new age called New Age Magazine. referencing the coming new age, the age of reason. They often talk about the age of reason, and they hold it pretty high in esteem. So does the Rosicrucians. I mean, I think it's almost completely, you'd have to be completely oblivious to look at all these different things and think that there's no reference to Masonry. Now, or the mystery cults in general. Now, taking into consideration that this is actually a, granite artifice. Freemasonry, granite, stone, mason, granite, hello. they could have made it out of metal, but they chose to make it out of granite. At one of the near the capital, the granite capital of the world, or is that's what they christened themselves as. I don't know if it's legitimate because I don't know where most granite comes from, but allegedly a lot of granite comes from that area. And they put all this information on there. I just think it's obviously Masonic, Rosicrucian. I think they're all the same. I call them the mystery schools or mystery cults because that's what they were called in the ancient world, and that's what they refer to themselves as. If you actually study it, they consider themselves all mystery traditions, mystery cults, or mystery religions. Now, the last one is sunbeam through the capstone marks noontime throughout the year. When the sun is in the highest point, it is called the Most High. Also referencing the sun as being God, called the Most High God. It is said that a battle will ensue between the forces of light and darkness, and that will bring the demise of the sun, which brings it to be resurrected next morning. The sun, the savior, the son of God, S-U-N, and all that stuff, all coming from Freemasonry. And the sun going through the capstone is referenced, like if you look at the pyramid with the capstone in it, there's always a capstone. The capstone is the thing that holds together something. Capstone on the pyramid holds the pyramid together. A capstone on an archway keeps the archway from falling down. The capstone, cornerstone and the capstones are the two things. The cornerstone in reference to the basis of the building or structure, which could be considered the basis of an argument. The cornerstone of democracy, for example. There's no real cornerstone, but they're talking about the idea. It's the basis of democracy. A cornerstone of democracy is... Well, the reference to the cornerstone. Well, the reference to the capstone is the thing that holds it together. Okay. In Gothic architecture, they didn't use mortar. They would carve the stones just right using architecture, and it would hold together the archway. And the capstone was removed, the archway would fall. So, what is it? Why is this the capstone? Because these four cultures, which happen to be the four places that the mystery cults originate from. The mystery religions of the ancient world originated from these four places, okay, according to them. And it's the capstone holding together the rest of the world, or the rest of the world religions. Call it a coincidence. Call all of this a coincidence if you want. I don't think it is. So I'll go ahead and leave the subject of the Georgia Guidestones, which I think, if you boil it down, it is literally the future ideas of the mystery cult religion. The New World Order, and all of the other stuff that goes along with it. Let's see here. Let's go into my Lucifer quote. Now, I did a show on Lucifer, and I did a show on many things, but mainly the topic's Freemasonry, and I talked about Luciferian, the idea that these people worship Lucifer, because that seems to be an idea going around circles these days, and what has been going around for quite a while, especially among Christian circles. And I'm telling you, as somebody who studied them vigorously and has both been a Christian and an atheist and whatnot, I can tell you they do not worship Lucifer, nor have they ever worshipped Lucifer. They don't believe in anything. Like I told you, they believe in atheism. They teach atheism. They teach that these ideas of gods are superstitious, that gods are only good for philosophic concepts. Philosophy is absent of ideas of God. It's a very humanistic way of interpreting things. Okay? Hence, theosophy, the philosophy of theology. Okay? It's kind of a mix between theology and philosophy. Theosophy. That was founded by Blavatsky. Blavatsky being the mother of New Age religion, the teacher of Alice Bailey, who married Foster Bailey, a 33rd degree Freemason. They all run in circles. So don't get it twisted. Freemasonry is the origin of the ideas, and all these other groups kind of branched out from them. And they do not believe in gods. They don't. It's philosophy. It's a philosophic society. Okay? So don't get it twisted when we get into this topic. I'm going to go ahead and play a quote now. I don't know how long it's going to be, and I don't know how long I'm going to play. But I'm going to play me first so you can hear what I had to do. It's 15 minutes. Oh, crap. I don't have that much time. And then Anime Sonic 1's 8 minutes, so we're looking at 20 minutes. I still have enough time. Okay. I'm not sure if I'm going to just stop it, or I might skip it during the point if I feel like it's getting too big, because 15 minutes is a lot, and it's from a previous show. I'm doing this to let you see that the clip I'm going to play afterward comes from Freemasons. I did an interview with a guy named I'm forgetting his name right now, but he does a radio show called Masonic. Oh, his name's Masonic Traveler, and he has a show called Masonic Central. He started up not too long ago, and he had the authors of a book that took Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike and reinterpreted it to be a simpler language for people to understand, because they felt that it was getting ignored and kind of thrown to the wayside, and that a lot of the teachings that he did in there were not being grasped because of the language was too complicated to read and too annoying that people didn't even bother. And they didn't want those things to get lost, so they reinterpreted the book, trying to keep all the original concepts. And they get into the concept of the quote from Lucifer, and they expand on what he was saying and then reword it to try to make sense of it for the average person to read, so it's easier to understand. And basically, when they break it down as exactly the way I broke it down, except for, you know, I say it a different way than they do. But this is just to show you that they do not worship Lucifer, nor have they ever worshiped Lucifer. And it just irritates the crap out of me that people keep resorting to this nonsense, because it is. It's total nonsense. So here's my quote, and we'll go ahead and play the clip from the authors of that book and their interpretation of that quote that they redid in the new Morals and Dogma Revised. Let's start with Lucifer. Why is Freemasonry use Lucifer so frequently? What does it mean? Well, if you'll do some research, you will find out that Lucifer is the only Latin word in the translated Bible. It was a word that was kept Latin. But it was originally not a name. It was not a noun. It was an adjective. Okay? It was meant to describe something or someone. The light bearer or the morning star. What does that mean? If you look at it, if you get into the research, scholars have agreed that this doesn't actually represent a person, and actually several scholars have even come forth and put out a proclamation saying that Christianity as a whole needs to adopt this idea, because they have actually created a deity out of a word that was not translated into English. It has nothing to do with a deity. And any basic research can teach that. Now, some people will argue, but though it's a waste of time if they do any real research into it. The scholars have agreed that it is a mistranslation to a degree. It's not a mistranslation. It's an untranslated part of the Bible. It's not a noun. It's an adjective. And it's probably describing what was being talked about prior to that quote in Isaiah, and that's the only time Lucifer shows up in the Bible, by the way, that prior to that, it was talking about a king of Babylon. Now, the king of Babylon supposedly was a king who wanted to be in the seat of God's throne. He wanted to have God's power and wanted to rule. And from what I understand, everything else that you understand about the context of the use of the word Lucifer is correct, except for applying it to some kind of supernatural deity outside of the king of Babylon doesn't work, because that's not what it means. Lucifer is not a person. Understanding that fact, and you can do your research. I'm not going to go through and do it for you, but it's not hard to find out. There's plenty of resources out there about it. Now, understanding that Lucifer is a mistranslation, let's take into consideration what Christians have done with that mistranslation or untranslated version of the Bible. They have literally created, in some cases, depends on what person you listen to or whatever, but most of Christianity as a whole, the majority of which has adopted the idea that this Lucifer creature is either Satan himself, an agent of Satan, or perhaps another name, or what do you call it, a higher being than Satan. I have heard all three versions of that. Obviously, all three are false, because Lucifer is not a noun. It was not a name. It was an adjective. It was a descriptive term used to describe something in the Bible. And if you can argue what that is, I think it was probably talking about the king of Babylon in Isaiah. So being that that's the case, what does that mean? Better yet, let's think about what Albert Pike means when he talks about it. And I'll read that quote here in a second. But first, let's read a quote from The History of Magic by Eliphas Levi, considered one of the foremost occult magic books available. This is on page 161, under the Divine Synthesis and Realization of Magia. According to the Kabbalist, the true name of Satan is Jehovah reversed. For Satan is not a black god, but the negation of deity. Now, the only reason I'm going to stop here and say something about that is because we're going to read this a couple more times during this teaching. The negation of deity. He is not a black god, but the negation of deity. Satan is Jehovah's name reversed. What he's talking about there is a concept that we'll get into called dualism. Dualism is a root understanding of theology according to the occult. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. He is the personification of atheism and idolatry. Opposite sides of the spectrum, A. One represents literally a visible deity, God, and the other one represents quite the opposite. Atheism or even idolatry. But make sure you pay attention to the fact that he said atheism. The devil is not a personality for initiates, but a force created without a good object. Though it can be applied to evil. It is really the instrument of liberty. They represented this force, which presides over the physical generation, under the mythical figure of the horn god Pan. And hence comes the goat of the Sabbath, brother of the old serpent, the light bearer, or Phosphorus, converted by poets into the false Lucifer of legend. The false Lucifer of legend. Think about that for a second. Let's get into morals and dogma. Sorry, I gotta find it. Okay, I'm having a little trouble finding it, but I will find it. Looks like my understanding. You don't get the context. Here we go. Found it. This is almost the plagiarism of Levi. Okay? Now, they always say, Albert Pike was a Freemason, but Eliphas Levi wasn't really a Freemason, and he wasn't really representative of Masonic teachings, and they'll sometimes even put him down a little bit. What they don't get is that a lot of what Albert Pike said was basically from Levi, Eliphas Levi, and his real name was Louis E. Constant. So, here's the quote. The apocalypse is, to those who receive the 19th degree, the apotheosis of the sublime faith, which ascribes to God alone, and despises all the pomps and works of Lucifer. Now, granted, this is a degree, and he's making that statement there based on the degree. It has nothing to do with what he actually believes. It has to do with what the person in that degree should believe. Okay? Because it's not a full revelation of the truth at this point. But it gives hints. Your job is to investigate and read between the lines. Let's see what the hint is. Lucifer, the light bearer. Emphasis on light bearer. Strange and mysterious a name given to a spirit of darkness. Lucifer, the son of the morning. So there he is. He's emphasizing the distinction between what the word actually means and what it's perceived to be. Lucifer is perceived to be a creature of darkness, but his name literally means the light. Is it he who bears the light, and with its splendors intolerable, blinds feeble, sensual, and selfish souls? So basically saying that his light is so bright, in fact, that it actually blinds the feeble, the sensual, and the selfish souls. Who do you think he's referring to? Well, he'll give you a hint in just a second. Doubt it not. For traditions are full of divine revelations and inspiration. And inspiration is not of one age nor of one creed. Plato and Philo were also were inspired. Okay, so now he basically says and makes it clear that there's no inspiration of a single religion. That there's several inspirations from all the different religions. This is a direct... he's alluding to Christianity, specifically. But you're supposed to read between the lines here. If you just read through that and you didn't actually research what Lucifer meant and followed his prompts when he actually emphasized light bearer. Let's look at what did he emphasize? Lucifer, the word in capitals, the light bearer, emphasis on light bearer. Strange and mysterious a name given to the spirit of darkness. Lucifer, the son of the morning. Is it he, emphasis on he, who bears the light and with its splendors intolerable blinds feeble and selfless and sensual souls? Doubt it not. So basically, the thing about this you have to understand is that the purpose of Freemasonry is to be a guide. It's an educational path. And if you choose to take it, you can learn what they want to teach you. But a lot of people just join, they look into the stuff, they'll do a little bit of tinkering around, but they don't do any actual reading. Now granted, I've said this before, Freemasonry is less applicable today because nowadays you can receive the teaching of science and the comparative religion concept of Freemasonry in colleges. I mean, they're teaching it at a university level. I took a comparative religions course and I was blown away. He taught it almost exactly the way Freemasonry does. Except for he did more of a focus on the major world religions. And being that it comes from the form of ancient cult-like religions between all the different major religions, to make you look at the connections between things like Zoroastrianism and the Book of Revelations in the Bible. It wants you to make that connection because they're building a history for you. They're building a lesson. They're saying that this is where this comes from. And ultimately, when you trace it back, the conclusion you're supposed to come to is that this all comes from a form of ancient paganism. And being that it comes from a form of ancient paganism, what good is there in believing in religion at all? It was a primitive concept of man to try to understand his world, and it has grown since then. Now, we talked about the concept of dualism. Now, I'm taking this from Wikipedia because I thought that I don't like the quote from Wikipedia.
Okay, I'll go ahead and stop there. So that's a quote that's my clip from a show I did about 2 months ago, okay? Or actually more like 3 months now. And I believe it's 3 months. I could be wrong. Anyways, I'm not sure what the exact date is, but it's about 3 months ago. Well, only a few weeks ago, the Masonic Central podcast had this interview with these people who rewrote Morals and Dogma from Albert Pike's, of Albert Pike's book. And they started breaking down at one point during the interview the quote about Lucifer. And it was really interesting because they basically confirmed exactly what I said. Lucifer is literally a adjective describing what is called the light bearer. It is not a noun. It is not a name. It was likely to be referring to the king of Babylon previously acknowledged in the book of Isaiah. And people have taken that word that was not translated from Latin into English and as light bearer, and they have created a deity of nothing. Of nothing. I mean, literally, created a deity out of nothing and considered it to be somewhat of a relationship to Satan, depending on what theologian you're listening, you're talking to or whatever. And major theologians have acknowledged over in history that this does not refer to an actual being. It actually refers to a thing called the light bearer. Another interpretation is phosphorus, which is the same word used that Jesus used to describe himself when he called himself the morning star. It's the same thing. Now, what was it being referred to? Why would they call it the light bearer? Or why would that even be brought in? That's up for debate. Some people said that it was meant to bring about a reference to this
satanic spirit in this king. I've heard all these different arguments. It's irrelevant. The point is that Lucifer, the word light bearer, has been made into a creature of darkness, alias Satan. Okay? So when Eliphas Levi and Albert Pike use that reference, what they're actually saying is, isn't it funny that people are so ignorant and superstitious that they took a word that literally means light and turned it into a creature of darkness? How funny is that? And actually, it's even funnier that they actually, it's because of their ignorance that they have actually created a being that they're fearful of. And so it's almost like a perfect embodiment. Hey, let's say that Lucifer's a good thing, and that'll really freak them out, because obviously they don't get it. They don't get that this is actually nothing. It's an adjective. It's like saying you're afraid of being happy, or afraid of being, you know, a good kicker of a soccer ball. You know, it's a good kicker. And, you know, it's a descriptive term. You know, a light bearer, you're afraid of that. You create a deity out of it. And that's why he put an emphasis on light bearer and he, because it's not a he, it's not anything. It's not a person. It's an adjective. Okay? People, and this is why people have read that and interpreted that as symbolic worship of Lucifer. And what are they doing? They're doing exactly what I talked about with Anubis a second ago. They're confirming their stupidity to these people. They literally are confirming their own ignorance. When you people do this stuff, when you deface things like the Georgia Guidestones, you're confirming your ignorance. When you don't spell things right, when you don't understand the concepts, when you started making all these accusatory statements, these people are not dumbasses. You are making yourself look like a dumbass. That's why I say if there's going to be any real debate and battle against these people, it's going to have to be done with people who understand what's going on in their head and can hold an argument, a valid argument against these people. I mean, that's the only way to win. It's a philosophic concept, the New World Order. And it's being taught at university levels throughout the country. Thousands and thousands of people who are moving into positions of power and authority over this entire damn world, coming from these colleges, have been indoctrinated with the concepts and philosophies that have supported the idea of the New World Order. And you're going to come up and start screaming out stuff over a bullhorn about some stupid shit that doesn't make any sense or have any relevance, and you think you're going to change their mind? No. You got to get involved in the intellectual debate, and you have to have reasonable reasons for why you think a New World Order is a bad idea if you want to beat this. And there are reasonable reasons. It's just I don't feel like thought has really played a part in this movement at all. It's been a whole bunch of emotional outlashing, which is exactly what they believe. The primitive state people, the people who are more primitive, are more emotional, and they're going to lash out emotionally. And those are the reasons, and those are the people who should not be in control of society, because they'll guide man using those passions towards destruction. And they need people who can temper their emotions. Like, remember what it's saying? With tempered reason, can control their passions and guide society. Hence, one of the Guidestones and what it said. That's why I'm absolutely sure those Guidestones were created by people of the mystery religions. A guide to the age of reason, one in which reason will override and destroy superstition. That is the agenda. That is the New World Order. That is the utopian vision. That is the only thing they believe that's going to get man to wake up and realize that he's in control of his own destiny and can guide it towards paradise. Utopianism. Okay? Now, I'm going off on a tangent here. Getting back to the quote or the clip from Masonic Central podcast, the authors of the new Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma Revisited and Reinterpreted to be a more common current language so you can understand it. Listen to what they say about Lucifer.
Relevant. Hold on, I got one guy that wants to ask a question for you, okay?
All right.
Go ahead, Vitruvius.
And just so you know, these are all Freemasons. So don't, if you don't think, and it's coming right, these people don't hide as much as people claim that they do. They don't. But listen to what they're saying.
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep. All right. Sure can.
All right. Great. Yeah, you guys sort of touched on something I was wondering about a little earlier, but it sort of had to do with the anti-Masons and some of their reaction to Pike's writings. And there's a very famous quote, which I probably don't need to quote on the air necessarily, but if I can find it here, it has to do with Lucifer the Light Bearer. You guys are familiar with that, I assume?
Oh, yeah.
This is intended to be kind of a fun question because, I think there's a lot of Bible thumpers out there and whatever that maybe really, really go for that quotation as their proof, you know, Freemasonry is leading everyone down the wrong path or something. But I'm just curious as to whether or not you decided or how you decided to handle that particular portion when you were doing your reinterpretation or whatever of the book.
Caller, just to let you know, I am going to pick up your call if you call back, but I'm going to let this clip play. It's about 7 minutes long. I'll keep my eye peeled for you. I'm sorry I missed your call, but feel free to call back. I'll answer it. But I won't actually bring you on until after a little bit of commentary, even after this clip.
Who wants to take that one by the horns?
Well, I'll start out.
You know, I think the way that we started out with it was, through the same sort of action that we had previously done, which was, let's look at the paragraph, the structure, and update it. And then, as Kevin had mentioned, we all sat down and said, okay, let's go after a few of these major, argument points. Or maybe it was JJ, I can't remember. But either way, so we spent some time looking at it. What each of us did then is we all read through the chapter and the major supporting statements before and after that particular sentence to try and figure out, what is Pike really trying to say at this point in time? And with that, I think it begins to fall out a little bit better that, a particular sentence extracted in its individual form does not necessarily make or break any sort of argument for anybody. But when you begin to really dive into it and to read the questions, and it's difficult, it's very difficult, as we all know, to read the original form of Pike, it does begin to, clear the clouds a little bit surrounding it. And we all came to an agreement on what we thought the intent there was for, and we tried to structure then that portion of the book, towards that final intent, not trying to remove it by any means, but just trying to present it probably in a better light, seeing as it was such a touchy way it was written the first time around.
I mean, I guess in that quote specifically, and I wish I had the book sitting in front of me. I don't. I guess that would have made sense to do that, but so I can't quote verbatim, but we did bring out the historical context specifically of the word Lucifer as what the origin is, from the earlier Latin translation of the Bible, and Lucifer being the light bringer in the sense of the morning star, the direct translation of that word. The problem that most anti-Masons have with that quote is either they're reading it backwards, that is, they don't understand the actual words in the quote, or they're cutting it short and they're not seeing the broader context of, I think, what Pike's saying in that particular paragraph.
Right, and I did bring the book, and
I have it up. I can read it if you'd like, the original Pike version.
Sure.
Just to get a little bit of context. Okay, so for those following along with Morals and Dogmas, page 321, and just to give you here, it is the 19th degree, Council of Kadosh, Grand Pontiff. So, okay. This is the original Pike version paragraph. The apocalypse is, to those who receive the 19th degree, the apotheosis of that sublime faith which aspires to God alone and despises all the pomps and works of Lucifer. Lucifer, the light bearer, strange and mysterious name to give to the spirit of darkness. Lucifer, the son of the morning, is it he who bears the light, and with its splendors intolerable, blinds feeble, sensual, or selfish souls? Doubt it not, for traditions are full of divine relations and inspirations, and inspiration is not of one age nor of one creed. Plato and Philo also were inspired. That's the paragraph.
Yeah, that's the original.
Yeah.
And so there's a couple of things. I mean, Pike's JJ, do you have our revision of that in front of you?
I do. And do you want me to go ahead and read it, or just...
Go ahead and shoot.
Please.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
we rewrote that paragraph, and it reads like this: to those who receive the 19th degree, the apocalypse is a representation of a sublime faith, aspiring only to God and despising the evil identified as Lucifer. The name Lucifer, in parentheses, the morning star, the son of the morning, was derived from the ancient Latin word for light-bearer, first used in the 5th century Vulgate translation of Latin translation of the Holy Bible. What a strange and curious name to give to the symbol of darkness. Centuries later, the work of poets like Dante and Milton equated the name Lucifer with Satan. Does Lucifer bear the brilliant light that blinds the feeble, sensual, and selfish souls? Absolutely. Traditions are full of divine revelation and inspiration, and genuine inspiration is not restricted to one age or one creed. Plato and Philo were similarly inspired. And that's how we address that paragraph.
It's a good addressment of it, I think. One of the ironies that strike me is that those that tend to misquote the original Pike don't really seem to even understand what he's saying in it.
Right.
You know, for the broader sense, because it takes a little bit of reworking to finally get to the meat of it, of exactly what he's saying. And to the contrary of what most are saying about Lucifer in his passage here, there's no veneration at all. There's a veneration to the idea of the bringer of light, but not to Lucifer. I don't know if you would concur with that or your thoughts to that.
No, I definitely agree with that. I think, first of all, Pike, in a sense, is using, he's questioning the irony of using a name derived from a word for light as representing a symbol of darkness. But I think the more misunderstood line, follows when he's talking about, essentially the light of Lucifer blinding the feeble, sensual, and selfish souls. And I think if you look at that in the context, you sort of have all of the scintillating sort of glamour of what, even in a modern context, in a fundamentalist anti-Masonic context, Lucifer represents. Clearly there's sort of a bright, shiny aspect to that does blind those who are weak to it, who are feeble and sensual and selfish, as Pike says. So, I think it's hard at its face value, if you really understand what Pike is saying, to disagree with that, even in a fundamentalist Christian or an anti-Masonic context. So I think it's just misunderstood completely, perhaps because it's worded a little strangely.
That early apiophis. I'm still butchering the word, but I actually have it up on dictionary.com. It's apotheosis, which really throws a lot of people. It's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. It's an elevation or an exaltation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. So there is some degree that these questions are being answered, that there's, stop taking it so literally, folks, and look at what's being said, rather than just trying to reword what Pike's trying to say.
So how do you like that? See what I'm saying? And this is exactly my point, and I guess this is the fundamental point of this entire show, which I didn't intend for it to be, but it kind of is an ending up there. If you're going around teaching things that you don't understand, you're confirming your stupidity to these people and to the public. Because when these people come out and tell the truth, everybody who goes, oh, now I understand it, and they look at all the people who have been saying they worship Lucifer, all those people now, everything that they represent, including the truth about the New World Order and how it's coming down, makes them seem totally stupid, and nobody's going to listen to them. They won't listen to anything you say. Oh, great. I have a phone in here. Anyways, just ignore that. I hate when I do that. I always forget that I leave phones in here. Anyways, do you see what I'm... Hold on a second. All right, that's the second time I had to do that. Just throw it out the door. Okay, do you understand what I'm saying, though? And it's not to attack anybody. It's just a simple reality. that people are just not wanting to face, which is, if you're going to go around confronting these people, you need to be well-versed in what the hell you're talking about, or you're only helping their cause. And by rallying up a bunch of people who don't fucking get anything and encouraging them to get political, take political action and address these things, you're going to get a small number of people. And you know what I'm saying? You're not going to get a lot of people who are very intelligent. And this is intellectual battle because it's being fought on intellectual grounds. These are people who are occupying positions of government and authority throughout the world because they're going through universities and they're learning the ideas and concepts, the political concepts. And this is all philosophy and concepts. And they're occupying those positions. And, of course, they're going to guide society in that direction. That's what they believe in. That's what they've been taught. The only way you're going to contradict that or fight it is if you understand the concepts, have a valid argument against it, and debate. Get in the debate. Start confronting people like Zbigniew Brzezinski instead of accusing him of doing 9/11 being an inside job. Break into a piece of his book and his promotion of Marxism, and get into some of the things that he says in there, and say, you know, I just want to, and get him into a debate. Say, what about this and that and this and blah blah blah, and just get him to say stuff that will dig him a hole. Because I personally believe, and I feel like I'm capable of it. Hopefully there's more out there who are, that if you get him into a debate, you will win if you understand what you're talking about. There are some valid points to be made, especially regarding Freemasonry and the agenda. And their idea that some people are more evolved, and how egotistical it is, arrogant, elitist, and how it doesn't. And you just, you know, you get, you, these are valid arguments. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, what's up, man? Hey,
wait, what's up? Wait, bro, you're breaking up a lot. Are you on a cell?
Yeah.
Okay, try again. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of in and out, but go ahead and give it what you got. We only got a few minutes left.
I was going to say, I agree with what you're saying about, you know, people who are Luciferian and devil worshippers, that, but we, I do think we're going to try to kill most of this. I mean, they're putting mercury, corn syrup and stuff like that. I see mainstream parties, but I don't know, man. But good show tonight.
All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, bro. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying these are good guys. I'm saying that these guys, on the top, especially on the upper levels, because they have a total disregard for the people. They look at you like freaking cattle. You're no better than cattle. Because you're unwilling to use your brains, they don't give a damn about you. They don't think that you're relevant. If you die, big deal. It's a stupid person off the earth. The only people they care about is the genetics of the people they consider to be elite. They're the only ones. I mean, they really give a damn about. And those are people who are wealthy enough to go out and buy the nice food, the food without mercury. They're smart enough not to use the toothpaste with the stuff in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's what they believe. As far as they're concerned, they're just participating in the battle of evolution, the elimination of the unfit. And you, in their opinion, because you're not as smart as they are the unfit. Don't prove them right. Stop proving them right. God, don't fucking write on the freaking, the Georgia Guidestones and misspell everything that you write. Stop confronting them on an unintellectual basis by bullhorning them in public and acting all crazy and emotional. We have to attack this mentally. It's a mental battle. It's a battle of philosophy. And if you want to see things change, you have to engage in the battle. Which means that you have to turn off your freaking TV and read. You have to read. Because none of this stuff's on TV. Okay? So start reading books. Start breaking it down. Get into conversation with people. And the only way I can tell you that you're going to get through reading all that without becoming one of them, and I can honestly say this because I was almost one of them, is if you have a grasp on values, a deeper sense of values, of truth, love, and freedom. Because if you don't, and you're somebody who walks around thinking everyone's stupid already, and you call them sheeple and shit, you're just going to end up being like them. I mean, really, you're going to end up despising the public, thinking that you're smarter than everybody, and acting the fool. I mean, straight up, that's what I believe. I don't see any other way around it, because their arguments are pretty valid, but their arguments are heartless. They lack any real heart. It's all about the outcome to them. And if a few people have to die, oh well. They don't look at babies that are dying and think, oh. You know, they just think, oh, that kid's gonna die someday anyways, you know? No big deal. Everyone dies. What matters here is the bigger purpose to them. And I don't believe that. I believe that there's a divinity involved here. There's something about the nature of man and its connection to God, whatever you want to believe that God is, and our connection to each other that makes these things wrong, that makes these things evil. I really believe that. And you have to, and if you don't have that sense of morality, that deeper sense of purpose in life, and this adherence to concept, like the principles of truth, love, and freedom, you are going to become one of them. Because if you're all based on your head and you have no heart involved, I guarantee that you're going to be convinced. Because they got good arguments, man. The only thing that really contradicts is my heart. My heart goes, that's wrong. So if I didn't believe in these things, I can tell you right now, I'd probably end up being one of them. Because I almost jumped on board this shit. But now I have the knowledge to go against it. So anyways, I got to get off. I'm going to go over time. But anyways, just let everybody know I'm going to be hitting the road soon. Please tell people about the show. If you like what you're hearing and you enjoy the content, I need to spread this word. I want people to learn about this stuff. So please participate by letting people know about the show. Go and post it on forums and stuff. I'm not going to promote myself because I'm just not that type of person. So please take the time to go do it and help me out if you really think the information is worth spreading. If you don't, then whatever. Don't do it. I mean, just do it if you believe in it. Because I'm not going to do it, and I don't want just only people who stumble across the show to find out about it. So, and I'm also going to hit the road, and I'm going to go across the country. And if you want me to come to your city and do a teaching and teach you all about this stuff, I'm going to have a full PowerPoint presentation, several PowerPoint presentations on various subjects going on. If you want me to come to your area, please let me know, and I will do that. So, anyways, until next week, peace and love. Soul Real signing out.
Up. We shall not be moved, except by a child with no socks and shoes. If you got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. Stand up. We shall not be moved, except by a woman dying from a loss of food. If you've got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. We still don't understand. Thunder and lightning flash back to when we didn't fund the dam. Didn't fund the dam levy? No wonder, man. Now a whole damn city's torn asunder, man. Underwater, but we still don't understand. We've seen hurricane spills overrun the land through gaps you couldn't fill with 100 tons of sand. No, we still don't understand. We've seen planes in the windows of buildings crumbled in. We've seen flames sending chills to London, and we've sent planes to kill them, and some of them are children, but still we crumble in the building. Underfunded, but we still don't understand. Under God, but we kill like the son of Sam. But if you